The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude. Taking the time to look into one another's faces and see their communion. The reflection of our own eyes. This house of laughter and silence, memory and hope is hallowed by our presence together. I'm Cindy Westfall, member of TPUF, the care team and worship committee, and I welcome you to our community of light and love. If today is your first visit to TPUF, we welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, which may be a different worship experience for you. Today we are going to talk about our chosen life's work, our purpose, and how our purpose is aligned with our UU values, which we'll talk more about in a little bit. But first, we're going to light our chalice. And Preston's going to assist me. He's such a good friend. And as we light the chalice, may the light we now kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom. And that was from the Passover Haggadah. And we'll light the peace lamp. Lighting the peace lamp, as we say, leader, may peace be with us.
And with all
the people of the world. Amen. Thanks, Preston. And now we're going to sing hymn 325. It's in your hymnal if you care to, or the words will be right up here on the screen.
From heart to heart and hand to hand, love finds a way when laws are blind and freedom bound. Love breaks the laws of language, gender, class, and age. Love gives us wings to slip the bars of every cage. Love lifts the bolts that force and fear.
So today we're talking about work, business, what we do every day. And some of us are retired and some of us are not, but we still work, right? We still have purpose, or we find work and find our purpose. A great book that I'll be referring to today by David Brooks is called The Second Mountain. And it talks a lot about, I would highly recommend the book. It talks a lot about just what we do after the first mountain. And the first mountain is our work, raising our family, making a home, building our careers, and we get to the pinnacle of that mountain, and then we retire or we move on. And what's next is what they call the second mountain, and that's what is our purpose, living a moral life and how we align our values with what we do during our work. And if we're so blessed to have work that's meaningful and purposeful, and then we figure out how to get paid for it, right? So they say, find something you love to do, figure out how to get paid for it, and you'll never work a day in your life. And our speaker today, I think, is gonna speak to us about that. But first, I'd like to bring the children forward if they'd like to come forward, or even adults who are at their hearts are children, they can come forward too. So, any kids want to come forward for a reflection, a meditation? No? Okay. All right. I think what we talk about before we let the kiddos go to their classrooms, if that's what they choose to do, is when we are asked, a lot of times children, or we ask children, what are you going to do when you grow up? What are you going to be when you grow up, right? And what I would like to do is give the children and all of us in the room who are children at hearts, in our hearts, time to reflect on that, right? So we're going to do a meditation. Linda, my friend Linda, gave me a really cool meditation. So I would like for you, we're going to do a lot of meditating today. So I'd like you to find a comfortable position. You guys know the drill. Find a comfortable position. Keep your back straight, feet flat on the ground. Hands resting on your knees or in your lap. Close your eyes. Gently feel comfortable and relaxed. Take some deep breaths. Inhale deeply through your nose, allowing your belly to rise. Hold the breath for a minute. And then exhale slowly through your mouth, feeling your belly fall. Listen to your breath and count your breaths. Silently count one with every inhale, two, three, and as you breathe out, count one, two, three. And if your mind wanders, gently guide it back to your breath. Bring your attention to different parts of your body, starting from your head down to your toes. Notice any sensations of tension or relaxation. Imagine breathing warmth and calmness into each area and feel a deep letting go. Visualize a peaceful scene where you love to be, a quiet beach, a serene forest. Imagine the smells and colors of this place. And then think of yourself in your ideal place of work, doing something you love to do. That's not really work, doing or feeling something that makes your heart sing. And when you feel ready, gently bring your awareness back to your breath. Begin to wiggle your fingers and your toes. And when you're ready, slowly open your eyes. If you feel so inclined, if you would like to raise your hand or just say what was on your mind, what you visualized yourself doing that makes your heart sing. Anyone? Cooking good food for people.
Releasing the monarchs this morning.
Did you release the monarchs? Oh, that makes your heart sing. Nice.
Traveling.
Helping out people that are close to you that are in need of help.
Serving others, helping people close to you that need help emotionally. And some of us have that in our work, and some of us find that. So, anybody online, John, wants to share? Welcome to those of you online. Appreciate all of you joining us today. And we will go to our next, let our kiddos go to their classroom if they'd like to go, or they're welcome to stay. And now in peace,
go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go.
I love those kiddos. Love to see their faces in here. Thanks for bringing them today. So what we're talking about before I introduce our speaker, who I just love, and I know you will love her too, we're going to talk about a little bit about work and purpose. First, I'd like to say, when we talk about work, a lot of what we heard earlier, right, is serving others and cooking and healing. So some words that came to my mind when I was talking and putting this together was building, creating, serving, as Noah said, teaching, healing, which is cooking for others, protecting. These are all words we use when we talk about our work. Right? Whatever our occupation is, any one of these words, or several of these words, are actually part of our occupations, or part of our business. Aligning our work with our UU values is important to finding the purpose in our work. So let's talk about our UU values. And as we speak today, I would like for you to meditate and reflect on our values, because you'll hear today a lot of talk about our 7 UU values, which are the first and foremost, most important is love, interdependence, equity, transformation, pluralism, generosity, and justice. So I asked our speaker, Kate, to come to speak with us for 2 reasons. One was to talk with her, for her to talk with us a little bit about how her work is meaningful and purposeful to her and her values. And two is to teach us a little bit about yoga and its purpose from a spiritual perspective. Kate Goodyear is from southeastern Pennsylvania and calls Phoenixville her home, where she lives with her husband, Noah, and their dog. You didn't include the dog's name. Frankie? That's a great dog's name. She started teaching yoga in 2011 and opened Nectar Yoga Studio in 2018. That's in Phoenixville. She has since opened another yoga studio in Audubon, also called Nectar Yoga. Kate has dedicated her life to the practice and teaching of yoga and the spiritual path that it has brought her to. She wants people to know that yoga is not just physical, but it's the way in which you live your life. She believes in the power of community, integrity, and service, and she's happy to be here sharing with us today. So, Kate Goodyear.
Hi, guys. Thank you. My name's Kate, and I'm happy to be here today. Over the last like 15 to 20 years that I've been teaching, a lot of what people think of as yoga practice is skinny white chicks in tight clothes or scantily clad, making like ridiculous shapes with their body. But yoga is a deep-rooted spiritual and philosophical practice. And depending on the historian, they say it can go back anywhere between 2,000 and 5,000 years. And there are several texts that we look to for yoga philosophy. The first one, this is the most recent, is called the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, which is a book. It's one of the ones that's more real life kind of stuff. It has a lot of purifying practices in it. Some of them you might be familiar, like if you've ever heard of like a neti pot, this is like where a neti pot comes from. There's other ones that are a little bit more extreme that aren't practiced so much anymore. But it's also like very practical. And it has things like when you practice to put a fence around your practice yard, which, you know, 10 years ago might seemed like kind of funny, but then during like quarantine when everyone was doing yoga on Zoom at their house and you got like your dog on your mat and you can't step your foot forward, it's like, okay, maybe we really should close the door while we're doing this kind of thing. And then we have probably the most famous is called the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita is about 2,000 to 2,500 years old. This one is rooted in Hinduism, so it is, out of the ones that I'll talk about today, probably the most dogmatic of them all. But the Bhagavad Gita is part of a much larger text, like an epic story. And this chapter of it is a prince who is also a warrior, and his name is Arjuna, and he's getting ready to go into battle, but he's very hesitant to go into this fight because on the other side of the battle is his cousins and his uncles, and he's really just nervous about it. So Krishna is his charioteer and the person who's going to be like leading him into battle. And Krishna, or Arjuna, doesn't know that Krishna is one of the avatars of God. And the whole story is their conversation back and forth. And a lot of it is about doing what's right, even though it's what's hard. It's a lot about finding your own path and your own way and living a moral life. The word yoga itself means to yoke or to bring together. It is about a sense of union and a sense of oneness. So through our yoga practice, we learn about our different aspects of being. So we have like our physical body, we have our breath and our energetic body. We have our mind, which is our thoughts and our emotions, the things that are more transitory, that come and go, that we experience. And then we have the things in our minds that are more fixed, like our wisdom and our knowledge, the things that stay with us. And we also have our spiritual essence, or our awareness, our consciousness. And our yoga practice hopefully brings all of these different pieces together, which is the way that we experience the world. And it also brings us to that aspect, or that knowing, that we are all more alike than we are different. And I think this is the beginning of where we start to see yoga philosophy and the UU principles come together, is with that sense of oneness. So my favorite text on yoga philosophy is called the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. This one's also about 2,000 years old, or it was written down about 2,000 years ago, but it was passed down through oral tradition for an unknown amount of time before that. And it's written in a way that it was meant to be memorized so that it could be passed down orally, and then you sat with your teacher and discussed the different lines or the different parts that you memorized and kind of unpacked it. This one's my favorite because it is less dogmatic. It's less tied to any particular religion, but it shows us that even 2,000+ years later, that the human condition has largely remained the same, that we have the same issues and the same problems that our great-great-great-great-grandparents did when it comes to, like, who am I and why am I here and what am I doing? And through the Yoga Sutras, we have the eight limbs of yoga, which is really applicable to modern day life, I think. So the eight limbs are very similar. The beginning part of them are really similar to, like, the Ten Commandments. The first limb is called the yamas, or the restraints. And you can think about this as ways that we deal with other people. So there's five of them. We have ahimsa, which is non-harming or non-violence, trying to live your life in a way that creates the least amount of harm to others as possible. We have satya, which is called truthfulness, which hopefully we could all understand. We have asteya, which is non-stealing, or not taking things that are not yours, whether that's physical property or ideas. It can really go, like I said, a lot of these things, when you sit down and start talking to them, it's like an onion. You can just peel back layers and layers on them. The fourth one is brahmacharya, which is moderation or self-control. And then the fifth one is aparigraha, which is greedlessness or not coveting. So that's the first of the eight limbs. The second one is called the niyamas, and these are the observances, or you can think about them as the way that you deal with yourself. So here we have things like saucha, which is cleanliness or purity, taking care of yourself, taking care of your space, but also having purity in your words and in your thoughts. We have santosha, or contentment, which for a lot of people can be one of the tougher ones, especially in our society, which is really rooted in materialism and, like, keeping up with the Joneses. From a spiritual aspect, we need very little to actually be content, so reminding ourselves of that. We have tapas, which is discipline or austerity. I like to think of this one as just the discipline to keep coming to your yoga mat, or to keep coming to your meditation cushion, or to do whatever your spiritual practices are, and to continue to do them with dedication over a prolonged period of time, which is really what firmly establishes you in any kind of practice. But we see lots of different ways to practice tapas. Right now, like, the cold plunges, or like the ice baths, are really popular. That is a practice of austerity. Many different religions have fasting as part of their practice. Fasting is a form of austerity. It's a discipline that you take on. We also had what's called svadhyaya, which is study of the self. And this is like capital S self, or study of the soul, study of consciousness. So even just by studying these texts or by sitting in self-reflection, this is us studying ourselves, asking ourselves big questions like, who am I? And then Ishvara Pranadana is surrender to something greater than yourself, or surrender to God, offering your life's work up to something greater than yourself or the greater good. So these first two limbs of yoga, the yamas and the niyamas, again, they're really closely tied to other philosophical systems like the Ten Commandments. But after that, we have the asanas, which are the poses, which is what most people think of when they think of yoga. We have pranayama, which is breath control, or practice of your breath. If you didn't know, there's many, many different ways that you can breathe and learn to control your breath. And then the fifth limb is called pratyahara, which is when we begin to sit for meditation, pulling in away from our senses. So learning to control what information we're taking in and starting to block out a little bit of the outside world so that we can really turn inward to our own self. So these first limbs, we learn to live a moral life. We learn to control our bodies, to control our breath, to begin controlling our senses. And through that, hopefully we can sit in a still seat of meditation and begin to concentrate on whatever it is that we're meditating upon, which is the sixth limb, which we call dharana. And through that, we actually hit the meditative state, or we might hit the meditative state. You might just sit there and like think about that conversation that you had that didn't go so well 18 times, right? And that's meditation too. But hopefully with enough practice, we get to a point where we can actually have that sense of communion or sense of oneness with whatever it is that we're meditating upon, which would bring us to the eighth and final limb, which is enlightenment, or nirvana, what they call samadhi in Sanskrit. So most of us probably aren't going to hit a state of enlightenment in this lifetime, but hopefully we can start by living a moral life. And I'm not sure who said the quote, but there's a quote that says that when we pray is when we talk to God, and when we meditate is when we listen. And I think this is really important to have that sense of two-way communication with the God of your understanding. Because if you hear people, or you talk to people and talk about a relationship with God, but if we're only praying and we're only talking and we're only asking for things, that's not really a great relationship. Hopefully, you know, a lot of us have experienced a one-way relationship before, but we really do want to have that two-way relationship with God. So in order to do that, sitting in meditation can be a really powerful tool when we open ourselves up to listen and to receive, which is where kind of like intuition comes in, where we learn to trust the information that we are receiving and to be steady enough to be able to take action on that information. So I invite you today to kind of look at the way that you interact with God, and how do you receive information, or how do you open yourself up to receive that information? And sometimes it's like a little silly, but nature is like a really great place beside your meditation cushion. For me, I find a lot of feathers, I find a lot of four-leaf clovers. First part is you actually have to look. but I oftentimes find them in times where I'm looking for guidance, or I'm like wondering if I'm making the correct decision, if I'm moving forward in a way that's aligned with how I want to live my life. But one of my favorite spiritual teachers is Ram Dass. And most people don't consider Ram Dass to be a yoga teacher, because he doesn't teach poses, but Ram Dass really was one of the great yoga teachers of our times, because he taught oneness. And his main teachings were to love, serve, and remember. So he has a quote that I love, and I share this a lot, and he says, when you go out into the woods and you look at trees, you see all these different trees, and some of them are bent, and some of them are straight, and some of them are evergreens, and some of them are whatever. And you look at the tree and you allow it. You see why it is the way it is. You sort of understand that it didn't get enough light, and so it turns that way. And you don't get all emotional about it. You just allow it. You appreciate the tree. The minute you get near humans, you lose all that. And you are constantly saying, you are to this, or I'm to this. The judgment mind comes in. And so I practice turning people into trees, which means appreciating them just the way they are. And to me, this is love. Really appreciating people for who they are, appreciating people for maybe having a different point of view or a different understanding of something that can be different than yours, and appreciating their resilience rather than getting tied up in the emotional part of it. Remembering is remembering that we all come from and will return to the great unknown. And we're all here only for a short time, remembering that, and remembering that we are here for a reason. Maybe that reason is to spread the message of love. Maybe that is to live a life of service. Maybe that is just to enjoy the ride and to really experience what it is to be a human. There's a whole spectrum of what it means to be in a human body, the pleasures and pains, the ups and downs, and to really embrace that. One of my other favorite spiritual teachers is Alan Watts, and he talks a lot about just being conscious and being, he talks about the solar system as being like this firework show that God put on for us, and living in a state of awe. And he always goes, wow-wee. And just kind of like being alert to the magnificence that's all around us. So if you've ever been to my classes, I always end my classes with a Sanskrit mantra. Sanskrit is an ancient language. It's very similar to Latin in the way that it forms a lot of the modern languages that we speak, but people don't really speak Latin or Sanskrit anymore. But all of the texts that yoga comes from are written in Sanskrit, and some of those words that I was saying earlier that you might not have understood are Sanskrit as well. But the mantra that I like to close with is Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu. And what it means is, may all beings be happy and free from suffering. And may the thoughts, words, and actions of my life in some way contribute to that peace and freedom for all. And this is a traditional mantra from the lineage that I come from, but I think this brings us back to the UU principles of worth and dignity of all beings, justice and compassion for all beings, and living a life of service. So what does it mean to live a life in service, or to live a life in a way where your thoughts, words, and actions are creating a world where everyone can feel safe, where everyone can be at peace, where everyone can be free? And these questions, especially when we look at work, you might think that you might have to go out and make like a really large impact on society, but really, living a life of service is a string, it's like a string of pearls. It's a string of small acts and small things that you can do that add up to be something beautiful at the end of the day. And to me, building community is one of the main ways of living a life of service, especially in modern times where our lives are a lot different than they were a few hundred years ago, and a lot of us are more isolated, especially like through technology. Things like getting to know your neighbors, knowing your barista or the cashier at Wawa or at Wegmans or whatever, checking in on people that you know are having a hard time. But living your life in a way where you're practicing turning people into trees and appreciating them for who they are and making them feel included, living a life that creates unity rather than division. So how can we make other people feel like they're welcomed and make them feel like they belong and that their life matters? And when we talk about Dharma, which is what the Bhagavad Gita talks about a lot, one of the lines from the Bhagavad Gita says that it's better to live your life's purpose imperfectly than it is to try to live someone else's life purpose with perfection. So a life of service, we can't all do the same things. Like for me, I believe that my Dharma is to be a space holder. So I hold physical space at the studios, but I also hold energetic spaces in my classes, creating a place where people can come, they can heal, they can connect, they can move, they can grow, they can cry, they can laugh, they can build community, is what I believe my purpose to be. But not everybody can do that. We need people who are the storytellers, and we need artists, and we need numbers people, and we need someone to make the food, and we need someone with a first aid kit, and we need someone to run the tech, right? We need all different kinds of people. And all of these different things are ways that we can live a life of service. Because when you strip away all of the other stuff, underneath it all, after we have food, we have water, we have housing, we all have this deep sense where we want to be taken care of, we want to belong, we want to feel like our needs and our concerns are being heard and taken into consideration, that our life matters. And right now there's a lot of people who are kind of being pushed towards the edges and oftentimes being made to feel like their life might not matter as much. So I think it's our job to make that change and to bring people in and to bring them together to make them feel safe. As someone who has decided not to have children, I think a lot about legacy and what my legacy will be after I'm gone. And I really want my legacy to be that I loved people, that I built a longer table and not a higher fence, that I created a space where people could be themselves and they didn't have to worry about being judged, and that I included people. So when we do eventually go back to the great unknown at the end of the day, whatever that is, people aren't going to remember like what kind of car you had or how many hours you worked, but they're going to remember how you made them feel. So we talk about mindfulness a lot in the yoga space. Can we be mindful of how we interact with people and how we make other people feel? And again, this can be really, it doesn't have to be grandiose. It can just be like, you know, holding the door or asking someone how their day was. So I would like to conclude today with a brief meditation. And this comes from the lineage of Deepak Chopra, which is his meditation teachings are called PSM, or primordial sound meditation. We're not going to get into that, but the way that he starts his meditation is with the four soul questions. So we'll sit and we'll ask ourselves these purposeful questions, and then we'll just reflect on our breath for a few moments, similar to what we did when Cindy was leading. So as you begin to find a comfortable shape for yourself, and if it feels safe, you can close your eyes. If you'd rather keep them open, finding an unmoving point to rest your gaze upon. And as you come to your breath, maybe noticing those different aspects that make up who you are, noticing your body, noticing your breath, noticing any thoughts or emotions that you might be experiencing. And as we go inward, we try to connect to that part of ourselves that notices or sees or experiences all of these other aspects, what is sometimes called the witness self. And we're not necessarily looking for answers with these questions today, but just allowing yourself to open to see if anything lands for you. Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? What do I want? What do I want? What is my soul's deepest desire? How can I be of service to others? How can I be of service to others? How can I be of service to others? What am I grateful for? What am I grateful for? What am I grateful for? And as we sit in this self-reflection, noticing if anything landed for you today, can we be brave enough to take those hits or to take that inspiration that we may have received and to use that as we move forward in our lives? Loving, serving, and remembering. And coming back to that sense of oneness and to the fact that we are all connected, that we do better together than we do on our own. And taking a deep breath in. And a full breath out. Bringing yourself back into the space, back into your body and into this room. And I thank you all very much for inviting me to come today. Again, my name is Kate Goodyear, and I appreciate you listening.
Thank you, Kate. That was just wonderful. Thank you so much. And namaste. Namaste. So now it's time for us to bring open the floor to all of you. I'm Cindy Westfall, part of the CARE team. So one of our roles is to open our service up to anyone who wants to come forward with a joy or a concern. There is no joy or concern that you cannot bring here. So this is a community of inclusiveness and love. And I'd like to take a moment to come up and share at the microphone up here. And then we'll continue our service after. And if anybody online has anything, please raise your hand and John will get to you.
So we were going to bring this time of sharing to a close. We will sing, as we typically do, Spirit of Life. The words will appear on the screen here very shortly.
For sharing those joys, Terry and Preston. And it really wrapped it all together for me, I thought, just talking about service. You heard a lot of the same words coming through: love, compassion, service, remembering. I'd like to have some closing words by reading from the Bhagavad Gita, Brahman. So we are going to. Mine is the letters that are not bolded, or the words that are not bolded, and then yours are the words that are bolded. Can everybody see? You ready? So this is from the Bhagavad Gita. I am the self that dwells in the heart of every mortal creature. I'm the beginning, the lifespan, and the end of all. I am death that snatches all. I also am the source of all that shall be born.
I am time without end. I am the sustainer. My face is everywhere.
I am the beginning, the middle, and the end in creation. I am the knowledge of things spiritual. I am the divine seed of all lives. In this world, nothing animate or inanimate exists without me.
I am the purity
of the good. I am the knowledge of the knower. There is no limit to my divine manifestations. Action of my power and glory. And we've all heard each other say this before, which means the spirit in me honors the spirit in you. Namaste. Thank you. And this ends our service. I think we have some. Oh, I'm going to extinguish the chalice too. Extinguishing the chalice, but not all that it stands for, the symbolism of light and love, compassion and justice.